This is VOA News. I'm Nicole Livis. President Donald Trump calls it common sense compromise, but Democrats are labeling his proposal to end the U.S. government shutdown a non-starter. AP correspondent Shelley Adler reports.
Republican Senator James Lankford, who sits on the Homeland Security Committee, thinks the Senate should open debate on the proposal.
The president's put a reasonable compromise on the table. Everyone knew if we're going to go through this process, we're going to end up compromising on multiple different areas to be able to resolve it. But the core elements are there that we all strongly believe about. That is, how do you secure the actual border?
To the Democrat side and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
It's outrageous, and he's just playing politics, and this is a bad deal. It does not do the things that would move this country forward in a productive way.
Both Gillibrand and Lankford were on ABC's This Week. Shelley Adler, Washington.
The government has been partially shut down now for a month. Hundreds of thousands of federal workers are going without pay, creating financial hardship, and many public services are unavailable to Americans during the closure. President Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani is leaving open the possibility that Trump and former personal attorney Michael Cohen might have discussed Cohen's congressional testimony. But he says, so what if he did? On CNN Sunday, Giuliani said he didn't know if the two had discussed a congressional interview in which Cohen admitted to lying about a Trump Tower project in Moscow. BuzzFeed News reported last week Mr. Trump directed Cohen to lie to Congress. Special counsel Robert Mueller's office took the unusual step of publicly disputing that story. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff was a guest on CBS's Face the Nation Sunday. He says Mueller might have issued that statement to protect Cohen as a witness.
I assume that this was prompted by the reaction to that BuzzFeed report, but also it may have to do with the special counsel's wanting to be able to use Michael Cohen as a witness in further prosecutions.
Giuliani told CNN and NBC that President Trump never asked Cohen to lie. This is VOA News. Students at a Kentucky Catholic school who were involved in a video showing them mocking Native Americans after a Washington rally could face expulsion. In a joint statement, the Diocese of Covington and Catholic High School apologized and said they are investigating. Women's marches were held around the world Saturday with a message of anger and defiance aimed directly at the White House. This was the third year for the demonstrations. Afghan presidential hopefuls submitted their nomination papers just hours before the Independent Election Commission closed the proceedings on Sunday. President Ashraf Ghani and his ruling coalition partner Abdullah Abdullah are among the cabinet, the candidates. The July vote is under scrutiny because of lack of serious reforms to prevent a repeat of previous elections marred by fraud. Congo's capital was calm Sunday with residents attending church after the Constitutional Court confirmed the presidential election victory of Felix Tshisekedi. It was not clear if the population would heed runner-up Martin Fayulu's call for nonviolent protest against the court ruling. Tshisekedi said early Sunday the court's decision to reject claims of electoral fraud and declare him president was a victory for the entire country. Demonstrators in Greece gathered Sunday to protest a deal that would normalize Greek relations with Macedonia. Greeks have been divided over the deal in which Macedonia will change its name to the Republic of North Macedonia, and Greece will drop its objections to the Balkan country joining NATO and the European Union. Greek protesters say Macedonia's new name represents an attempt to appropriate Greek identity and cultural heritage. Macedonia is the name of Greece's northern province made famous by Alexander the Great's conquest. At least 8 UN peacekeepers have been killed in an attack on one of their bases in northern Mali. The UN mission in Mali said several others were injured in the assault on the base that houses peacekeepers from Chad. No one has claimed responsibility. UN peacekeeping forces have been deployed in Mali since 2013 to counter an Islamist insurgency and general lawlessness. The Associated Press reports Pakistan arrested more than a dozen counterterrorism officers Sunday. They came one day after the officers shot a couple, their teen daughter, and a family friend in what the officers described as a shootout with Islamic State militants. A major winter storm that blanketed most of the Midwest U.S. with snow barreled toward New England Sunday. National Weather Service meteorologist Rich Otto said it's bringing some of the coldest temps of the season.
It's a significant winter storm given the snow. There's been reports of up to 16 inches of snow so far. That's going to likely increase as we go through the day. And then as the storm continues to move east into Maine, they'll likely pick up another 1 to 2 feet across portions of central and northern Maine.
Winter storm warnings or advisories are in 15 states now. I'm Nicole Livis, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
If they want to bring everybody on around the table, Martin Fayulu, Felix Tshisekedi, Noel Chiani, and all the other candidates, that is fine. But we should not come back on the result because it belonged to the Constitutional Court to confirm this result, and that has been done, and we have passed that stage.
The DRC Constitutional Court confirms the electoral victory of main opposition leader Felix Tshisekedi.
There's something really strange going on. That is suspicion. So anybody that wants to leave this country has to be subjected to rigorous examination of his both his physical and mental capabilities.
Nigerian opposition groups say President Muhammadu Buhari's no-show at the presidential debate is unacceptable.
My joining the DPP at that point, I'm very convinced that I brought in additional votes, and therefore that must be respected. Well, it's not just about me, it's for other vice presidents to come in the future.
And Malawian Vice President Dr. Saulos Chilima dismisses demands for his resignation. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. An independent candidate in the recent Democratic Republic of Congo's presidential election has called on rival candidate Martin Fayulu to assert the ruling of the Constitutional Court. Noel Chiani says Fayulu's statement that the ruling was a constitutional coup was unfortunate and regrettable. Meanwhile, the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, has congratulated Felix Tshisekedi as the president-elect following the court's ruling. For the latest development, I reach independent presidential candidate Noel Chiani in the Congolese capital, Kinshasa.
Once the highest court in the land renders a decision on a dispute resulting from the election, it is important that all the candidates and everybody in the country accept that decision. I believe after following what had happened in the Constitutional Court yesterday, the decision was transparent. It was taken based on the case which was presented before it by Martin Fayulu and all the supporting documents, and there was no evidence that Martin was the winner of this election. So I believe that Martin Fayulu is making a mistake. He should accept the decision proclaiming Felix Tshisekedi as the winner of his elections, and we can move on. But calling on the people to go on the street to disrupt the stability of the country, I think that it's a big mistake.
He issued a statement saying the Constitutional Court has just confirmed that it serves a dictatorial regime by validating the false results. He believes there were voter irregularities, his strongholds were prevented from voting, among other issues. So this was not fair in the first place.
Well, the SENI has been accused of rising throughout this electoral process were various, but at the end of the day, this is a big country without infrastructure where it was very difficult to move the ballots from one place to another. So they did the best they could with the means that they had. So at this stage, rejecting this result means that we have to maintain the same Kabila regime in place until we can organize a further election maybe 2-3 years from now. And the people of the Congo are not willing to accept that. So in my view, we should move forward. The process was what it was. It had some imperfections, but it has led to the selection of one of us, particularly from the opposition, in replacement of Kabila's regime, so that we can start working on perfecting the democracy and developing the country for the future.
The African Union has called for dialogue and is ready to send mediators to Congo to help resolve any post-election crisis. Now, what do you make of this, and what do you make of Tshisekedi's call that he will try to mend fences to ensure the country remains stable?
Tshisekedi's call to make sure that the country remains stable is a good one. I do support that call, and I want the country to be stable so that we can devote our attention to development for the benefit of everybody. Now, the African Union, they should have arranged way before the end of the deadline so that they can come here, and then if there is any issue to be sorted out, they could do it on time. Now it is too late. And let's not forget that Paul Kagame, the president of Rwanda, is accused often in the Congo for interfering in the internal affairs of the country. While he is the head of the African Union, I don't believe that he is well positioned to give the lesson to this country, which wants to reaffirm its sovereignty and its national pride. So they all are welcome to come to the Congo, but they will have to come and meet with the new president-elect, and then we don't have to come again on the electoral dispute. If they want to bring everybody on around the table, Martin Fayulu, Felix Tshisekedi, Noel Tshiani, and all the other candidates, that is fine. But we should not come back on the result because it belonged to the Constitutional Court to confirm this result, and that has been done, and we have passed that stage.
Noel Tshiani was an independent presidential candidate in the DRC elections. He spoke with me from Kinshasa. Nigerian opposition parties are displeased that incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari failed to show up for the national televised debate Saturday. The parties say the president deprived Nigerians the opportunity to make an informed decision about the best candidate they think can resolve the challenges the country faces. But supporters of the president say the accusations are without merit. For the latest development, I read Chudi Chukwani, an economist and political analyst based in the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
From what I gathered, the whole nation, everybody was tuning, hoping to hear the main candidate, the main that is President Muhammadu Buhari and Atiku Abubakar. They wanted to hear them, listen to them, hear their programs, look at their body languages and see how they are able to provide programs, you know, that will be for the benefit of the country and how they can lead the people out of the current situation that they find themselves. So they were greatly, greatly disappointed that the current president did not show up, and the excuse he was given was seen as a very flimsy and unacceptable excuse by majority of Nigerians, own political party, and those of the opposition. Everybody was very disappointed.
But what excuses did he give that most people find regrettable?
They find it regrettable because he said there's a very important official engagement he was in on a Saturday. We are all in Nigeria. It's not as if we are in the moon. Nobody knows what this official engagement is, that he could not show up for debate. He has to give people much, much better excuses that are verifiable and that make sense.
Well, some are also faulting former Vice President Atiku Abubakar for not staying with the other candidates to debate on issues, but only say that he wanted only to debate the president, and because the incumbent president wasn't there, he left the stage.
I believe Atiku was reacted based on perceived the antics of the government. Most times, governments in power normally send what they call political surrogate, you know, just to destabilize the system. So most of the people that might be out there on the debating platform are just merely political surrogate, seeking 15 minutes of fame and playing the tricks, you know, of the ruling party. It would be, if you are a serious presidential candidate and you are there to unseat the incumbent, you, the candidate, should also equally be as much offended as the former vice president if the incumbent is not there. Because who are you debating now? Because all of you are out there to show that the incumbent is inefficient and you have a much better program than the incumbent, and that is why you want to replace him.
Is there any assurances from the government that perhaps if another presidential debate is organized, the president will be there?
There's no assurance whatsoever that I can know of that they gave that they were going to be there. What I think is the duty of anybody that loves this country and the duty of our international friends to insist, because there's something really, really amiss. Because when the president appeared with the vice president on their own state-managed and state-organized mid-town hall media chat, the interaction was seen by Nigerians who watched it as, you know, something very, very strange going on there. you know, and that the president was not answering a direct question to him. He seemed very disconnected with his environment and what was going on. So there's something really strange going on. That is suspicion. So anybody that wants to leave this country has to be subjected to rigorous examination of his both his physical and mental capability.
Chudi Chukwuani is an economist and political analyst. He spoke with me from Abuja. Meanwhile, the former Nigerian Vice President Atiku Abubakar says he plans to implement measures to jumpstart the economy to create jobs in an effort to improve the living conditions of citizens. Abubakar, who is the presidential candidate for the main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, also said he will empower the anti-graft institutions to combat corruption. In the second part of our sit-down interview with the former vice president, Atiku Abubakar outlines issues Nigerians expect the next president to resolve.
Today, if you ask Nigerians what is their number one requirement, they will tell you jobs. You don't create jobs out of vacuum. You have to expand the economy. From jobs, you come to the economy, you come to insecurity. In fact, corruption is about number seven. Nigerians are now no longer talking about corruption. They are talking about jobs. They are talking about what to eat. They are talking about their businesses. We are asking Nigerians, what do you want? What are your priorities? And it is based on those priorities that we are addressing them today. Look, we are prepared, you know, to comply with your wishes. First, we will expand the economy, we will liberalize it, we will continue with liberalization of our economy, which I started, but which has been stalled since we left office, so that we can create jobs and empower, you know, the young men and women who have been out of employment. 20 million is no joke, it's a time bomb. So this is number. And number two is, of course, our economy, to look at it holistically. In fact, one of the most important things I've been discussing since I came to the U.S. on the issue of the economy. How do we restore, you know, our bilateral relationship? How do we get more U.S. Investment into Nigeria?
Mr. Vice President, one of the many challenges you expressed here is security issues. Now, how would you tackle it? Because supporters of the president say he was an army general. He has the security acumen and the strategic sense to beat back Boko Haram and other militant groups. They say you have yet to have what it takes to implement any measures to combat terrorism, to make sure Nigerians are safe. What is your response to that?
You know, it doesn't have to take a general, you know, to fight terrorism, and you know, the United States has been fighting terrorism all over this world, and their presidents have not been generous. It's the leadership. It's the leadership, you know, of a president. I mean, if you are a general and you are not able, you know, to give that leadership, is most unfortunate. First of all, he came. By the time he came, he found out all the heads of the security services are due for retirement. He didn't do it. This is the problem. He is not providing, you know, the right kind of leadership as far as even the armed forces are concerned. They don't have the best conditions of service. They don't have the best equipment. They don't have the best training. So, I mean, this is not the issue of a commander, I mean, military leadership. It's the issue of the right kind of political leadership, which I believe is lacking as far as fight, you know, on terrorism, particularly Boko Haram, is concerned.
Let me say something funny. One of the accusations they leveled against you was that if Vice President Atiku Abubakar is able to come to the U.S., then he can win the election. These are analysts who said that. They said, well, you know, he's been accused of corruption back home, and because of corruption, he can't come to the U.S. How did you get here, Mr. Vice President?
I got here through the invitations of various organizations who actually are interested in the relationship between Nigeria and the United States. And that's why I am meeting them all over. I met with the Congress yesterday. I am meeting with the Chamber of Commerce. I'm meeting with the State Department. And so if I were corrupt or if I have any corruption case in the United States, you know the United States. They can't spare anybody. And nobody is too big for the United States to deal with, I wouldn't be here. I mean, I have always told them, look, I don't have anything. But it is the prerogative of the United States to give whoever they want a visa. Just like any other country.
I know of a number of ambassadors here who were denied visas by the Nigerian authorities. I had to intervene. I had to go and meet the president and say, you can't refuse visa to this gentleman. He's on the board of my university. So give him. He was refused visa for 7 years. He attended all our university board meetings outside, but he couldn't attend the one in Nigeria. Eventually, he was granted visa. So you see, the issue of visa is the prerogative of every country.
So what should the average Nigerian be looking up to? Because you talked about people who have been, because of prevailing economic conditions, can't fend for themselves. Poverty is so high. What will Vice President, or if you are elected president, what will President Atiku Abubakar do to improve the living conditions of the average Nigerian to say, when he was president, he did A, B, C, D, that transformed the economy, jump-started the economy, created jobs, employment was good, and I was able to help my family?
They should look at my track record and my experience as a vice president. In 1999, when we came in, the price of crude was $11, and we met foreign reserves of less than $5 billion. We met a huge debt. With this small income, we paid our foreign debt completely and became debt-free. We grew the economy at 6%. In fact, agriculture was growing at even 7%. And I was the head of the economic team. Come on. You should give me credit for that. And you should give PDP credit for that.
Atiku Abubakar is a former Nigerian vice president and presidential candidate for the main opposition party, the PDP. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. Malawian Vice President Dr. Saulos Chilima has dismissed calls for his resignation over corruption allegations for receiving monthly salary for no work done. The vice president, who seeks to challenge incumbent President Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika in the May election, says he has a good chance to win. In part two of our sit-down interview with him, Vice President Chilima addresses the allegations of corruption against him.
We came into power in 2014. And the contract I have with the people of Malawi, 1.9 million of them who voted, and perhaps a few more that built confidence in us along the way, they gave us a contract for 5 years, which expires in May 2019. And what I said is, I'm going to see that contract out. If I was going to quit, I would betray some people. And in my quest for the next office, they'll say, this gentleman has got a tendency to quit. What confidence do we have that he's not going to quit along the way? The Republican Constitution designates the vice president's office as a delegated office. So the president has got to give you something to do. And if he doesn't, as a self-starter myself, I find what to do in my office. I go to work because people still consult the vice president. I am, whether anybody likes it or not, I am the vice president of the country. So there isn't very much we can do to change that. And the citizens and other stakeholders will come and consult a vice president of the republic, who was rightly voted into office. So there is no such a thing as you are a corrupt person because you're receiving a legitimate salary. That's nonsense.
Well, you've had a situation in Malawi where the vice president and the president have fallen out. Why is this a problem in Malawi? Because Kassim Chilumba had a problem, and then Joyce Banda has a problem, and now you are also having a problem. What is the problem in Malawi?
Perhaps it's a Malawi problem. The Constitution of Malawi, as it is, provides for the creation of the vice president's office. It goes on further to say this is a delegated office. That's something that must be changed. Mm-hmm. You cannot have an office that's waiting for somebody's generosity or benevolence for you to do a job. And one of the things that we are advocating for in UTM is to have that office be a meaningful office, an office that is going to significantly contribute to national development. In any event, the president and the vice president go on the same ticket at the time of elections. So we must not allow a situation where one all of a sudden starts to behave as if they were more important than the other. Then otherwise we change the constitution, there must be no running mate. Everybody must win on their own. You know, appoint your vice president and fire them as you will. But as it is, we need a constitution that protects beyond what it does today the office of the vice president. Designate certain responsibilities constitutionally so that no president will come and think of abusing the other, especially, you know, where somebody has contributed votes. And we did so in 2014. It was a pair. And my joining the DPP at that point, I'm very convinced that I brought in additional votes. And therefore, that must be respected. Well, it's not just about me. It's for other vice presidents to come in the future. But there is a feeling that some people thrive in seeing that the president and the vice president are not in talking terms. And they will do everything that they must do to drive a wedge between the two people.
So let's talk about your party, the UTM. What realistically are the chances of the UTM in the May election? And are there plans to form a coalition, perhaps with former President Joyce Banda's party, or perhaps Chakwera's MCP? If I may ask, some people say the UTM does not have the structures on the ground, in spite of the momentum apparently being on your side.
Very interesting question, and also follow-up comments you make. First is, what are our chances? The chances are good. Why do I say so? Because there have been some studies that have happened and they put us in a very good position. We are neck-to-neck with the others. So that's the incumbent and, of course, the MCP and ourselves. And we think, you know, having been in existence for 6 or 7 months and we are at the top, we're in a very good position to claim a fair share of votes in May, and we continue to campaign aggressively. We're in a race against time, so we'll make sure that we take advantage of every opportunity to deliver our message. We are submitting nomination papers in the week beginning February the 4th, so we don't have too much time on our side, and we'll close that and communicate. Lastly is, people say UTM does not have structures. That's a lie. We have a lot of structures. And you see, politics is dynamic. Perhaps traditionally politics depended on structures at every level. As we go forward, you probably want to look at a balance. There are some people that don't want to belong to any political party, but they want to share, or they believe in somebody's ideologies. So they can go out there and vote, not because they belong to UTM, but because they subscribe to the message that we're putting across.
Dr. Saulos Chilima is the Malawian Vice President. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, I'm Lino Armudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss latest efforts to sustain the Global Fund to fight AIDS, TB, and malaria, the largest global partnership addressing the three diseases. Our guest is Elizabeth Ivanovich, Director for Global Health at the UN Foundation. For your questions or comments, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Yes, finally, it's the weekend. Hey, everybody, this is Heather Maxwell. Do you want to really enjoy your weekend? I can help you with that. You don't even have to leave your home or spend a single cent. Just tune in to your local radio station and listen to Music Time in Africa. This Sunday introduces Nigerian Afrofusion artist
Seun Olota, and it's titled Oweri Soup.
Yes.
Song of the Week, Katika, and so much more. Katika. Don't miss it. 1505 or 20500 Universal Time.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotin, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Mpuga and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Junior, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. But first, the Botswana Opposition Coalition has condemned the Hollywood-style arrest of former intelligence chief Isaac Coetzee, an ally of former President Seretse Khama Iyankama. Isaac Coetzee, a former head of the Security and Intelligence Directorate, was arrested shortly after he arrived from an overseas trip. The opposition group says the arrest is due to the ongoing feud between President Mokoetsi Masisi and his predecessor Iyankama. But officials of the administration say the former intelligence chief was arrested for tax-related violations. For the latest development, I read Kialebo Hadihetsu, a Botswana broadcast journalist in the capital, Gaborone.
The guy we're talking about here is the former director general of the Directorate of Intelligence and Security Services here in Botswana. Basically, our equivalent of CIA, really. So the guy is the founding director, and he was coming into the country from India, and he got arrested at the airport by the guy who replaced him.
But why was he arrested? What crime did he commit?
Well, I think to put things into context, from as far back as 2014, the media in Botswana has been reporting on various allegations of corruption on the part of this gentleman, Isaac Coetzee. And we had it on good authority that he's been successfully investigated by our corruption watchdog here. The docket was ready, but he was never really charged with anything. So that is the context. But in this particular instance, what we get to understand is that he's been charged with tax evasion, tax fraud. And that is what was served on him upon arrival at the airport. So as far as we know, because the last 3 days, they've been searching all his properties in the country. They've been, you know, raiding all his properties in the country. They detained him for one night, but they released him 2 days ago, but they put him under house arrest. He's no longer under the custodianship of the military police. He's now at his house, but he's under heavy guard.
Some people are saying his close relationship with former President Seretse Khama Iyankama could be one of the reasons why he's being investigated for some of these allegations of tax fraud and all that. What is your take?
So there's speculation that this is just one of the many factional battles between the two gentlemen. And there might be some merit to it in that we do know that this gentleman was very close to the former president. He's his former private secretary. And upon his retirement, the former president wanted him to come back to be his private secretary after he got fired last year in May. And the current president refused to actually accede to his demand. And so you can actually see he's quite close to the former president. And it's easy to see why people would speculate that this is just one way of actually trying to send the warning shots to the former president by the current president. There's nothing to suggest that is the case. We don't have evidence for that effect, but I understand how someone could speculate in that manner.
How are Matuanes reacting to this development, particularly when there are suspicions and rumors out there that his close relationship with former president Seretse Khama Iyankama, and because the former president and the current president Masisi are not seeing eye to eye, he's going after his people, supposedly.
There's a bit of jubilation in most quarters here in the country. Most people are initially shocked. We never thought it could happen. I mean, there was a point where we all believed this was the most powerful man in the country. And indeed, it's quite possible that he was the most powerful man in the country, very close to the president, heading the most, you know, powerful security unit in the country. So he was quite possibly the most powerful man in the country. And when he got fired last year in May, we never thought he was ever, ever going to be, you know, to be taken to task over some of the allegations. So for him to get arrested so publicly at an airport shocked us initially, and then there was a bit of jubilation in some quarters, but there's also a bit of concern as to whether it was necessary really to arrest him that publicly, to embarrass him like that, to humiliate him like that. And there are concerns that this could just be Botswana Democratic Party, the ruling party's factional battle. You know, state resources are being used to fight, you know, partisan politics, partisan factional wars and all that. So there's a bit of concern that maybe this abuse of state resources, but for the most part, there's a bit of jubilation that it looks like the new president is sticking to his promise that he will fight corruption, his promise that he will go after anyone who is known or is suspected to be involved in corrupt activities.
How will this end, if I may ask you, because it seems to be escalating sharply from when the fallout happened between the former president and President Masisi. Where will this end?
It's not clear at the moment because we actually thought the issue was going to die out eventually, but it looks like escalating, as you're saying. We hear that two or three ministers and some former ministers probably going to be, you know, investigated by this unit that is investigating the former director general. So it's likely that this situation will get worse before it gets better.
Kia Lebo Hadihetso is a Botswana broadcast journalist. He spoke with me from Habaroni. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Let's begin in the English Premier League, where Egyptian Mohamed Salah scored twice, including his 50th Premier goal, as Liverpool survived the scare by coming from behind to defeat a resolute Crystal Palace in a 7-goal thriller at Anfield on Saturday. Liverpool's win was secured after another African, Senegalese Sadio Mane, added a fourth in stoppage time. In the African Champions League, AS Vita Club of DR Congo beat Simba of Tanzania 5-0 in their second Group D match. Vita Club, who were African champions in 1974, began their scoring rout in the 14th minute, courtesy of a goal from Jean-Marc Mukusu. Vita move up second in Group D, 1 point behind record 8-time winner Al Ahly of Egypt, who are on 4 points after their 1-1 draw away to JS Saoura of Algeria on Friday. Also on Saturday, Ivory Coast ASEC Mimosa beat Lobby Stars of Nigeria 1-0 in Group A. Group A has also two recent former winners, Mamelodi Sundowns and Wydad Casablanca. Meanwhile, on Friday, an African Champions League match was abandoned in Egypt because of crowd trouble in a stadium likely to be one of the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations venues. The Group C match between hosts Ismailia and Tunisia's Club Africain was halted in stoppage time after sections of the crowd threw water bottles onto the pitch. There had been a number of crowd-related stoppages at the Ismailia Stadium before the premature end, with Club Africain leading 2-1. Egypt were chosen this month as replacement Cup of Nations hosts after Cameroon were stripped of hosting rights due to poor preparation and security concerns. Elsewhere in the African Champions League, Tunisia's Esperance continued their centenary celebrations with a 2-0 win over visitors FC Platinum of Zimbabwe. The match was played in an empty El Manzar Stadium in Tunis after CAF punished Esperance for poor behavior of their fans during last season's tournament. Later on Friday, Orlando Pirates of South Africa went top of Group B above Esperance on goal difference with a 3-0 win over Haroya of Guinea in South Africa. In tennis, fifth seed Kevin Anderson was knocked out of the Australian Open after being beaten in four sets by American Francis Tiafoe. The South African Anderson, who reached the finals at the Wembley Stadium in 2018, took the first set 6-4, but his 20-year-old opponent fought back to take the next three 6-4, 6-4, 7-5, and seal a place in the third round. World number 39 Tiafoe had never previously progressed beyond the second round in Melbourne. Elsewhere, Marin Cilic beat Mackenzie McDonald 7-5, 6-7, 6-4, 6-4. In another shock defeat on Sunday, Wimbledon champion Angelique Kerber was knocked out of the Australian Open by world number 35. Daniela Collins, in what some are describing as the biggest shock of the tournament. The world number two was thrashed 6-0, 6-2 in the fourth round in 56 minutes. The German broke early in the second set, but was immediately broken back and dropped serve a further two times. Collins will now play either American fifth seed Sloane Stephens or Russian Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova in the quarterfinals. Finally, in athletics, Bihanu Belu became the second Bahraini runner in 3 years to take top men's honors and at the 42nd IAAF Antrim International Cross Country on Saturday. Ethiopian Maskerem Mamo claimed the victory in the women's race. Bellu, the Asian 5,000 meters champion, followed in the footsteps of fellow countryman Aweka Yalu to take the victory on the 10-kilometer course. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Now back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent. And you will be hearing from Pato Ranking featuring Wandy Cole, My Woman, My Everything. Sheba featuring Bruce Melody with Imbira Zo and Ravine Kwetu. And then Yemi Alade with Boom Boom. Navy Kenzo will come your way with Kamatia.
Come here. most wicked, baby. The things you do keep hurting me, but I'll never leave, cause I'm stuck on you. With
Tanizika mzima mzima tena huku kwetu muda wote mateja na
Rashida and Nancy. Simi whiny. Hold on, not talking in bottles. I like to party. Be Shakira and Beyonce from Miami. I like to chill. Chilling with Duse and Jay-Z. Jump. Shawty, three, but no shake your bum, 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 bum. See, see, me I like to party. Party with the girls, make your body, yeah. Hey, hey, me I like to party. Party with the boys, make your money, with it. Go down when the music come up. You go down when the music come up. And go down when the music come up. When the DJ keeps them, then they gonna play. See me wine, see me deep below. See me dance to reggae and calypso. Shawty, three, but no shake your bum, 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 bum. See, see, me I like to party. Party with the boys, we get money, yeah. Me I like to party. Party with the girls, we get money, with it. Go down when the music come up, yeah. Go down when the music come up, yeah. Go down when the music come up. When the DJ keeps them, then they gonna fest. See, I like the way you looking at me.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. And now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Perhaps owing to the myriad of acute crises around the globe, there have been only subdued discussions of the next leader of the World Bank. Recently, the current president of the World Bank, Dr. Kim Yong Kim, announced his departure. And the need is to have a new president of the World Bank. As may be recalled, under the Bretton Woods institutions, agreements were reached at the end of the Second World War that the managing director of the International Monetary Fund, IMF, should be produced by the European countries, and that the president of the World Bank should be produced by the United States. For many, many years, many countries around the world have questioned this arrangement. But it was only in 2011 that there was an international debate as to need for a change. At that time, the well-respected director of the IMF, Mr. Dominic Strauss-Kahn, had to resign under a cloud. And the debate was that a new director should not come from Europe. In the midst of this debate, a respected French politician, Madame Christine Lagarde, threw her hat into the game. And the argument went that since she would be the first managing director of the IMF, it should be allowed to go to finish the term of office of Mr. Kahn. And so Christine Lagarde was elected as the 11th managing director of the IMF on 5th July 2011. few years later, when Mr. Zolnick of the United States left the World Bank, there was another debate as to whether or not the United States should be allowed to nominate the candidate for the post. After a lengthy debate, then President Barack Obama put forward the name of Dr. Kim Yong Kim, a Korean American. And then the debate was, this would be the first time that you have a Korean American as the president of the World Bank, and it should be allowed to go forward. And in both cases, that of Lagarde and that of Dr. Kim, it was promised that at the end of their term, the issue of who should follow them in office should be open. Now, we have seen that since the announcement of Dr. Kim's departure, there has been very little discussion, and the Americans are going ahead to nominate and appoint the next president of the World Bank. There have been reports in the United States that President Trump has designated his daughter, Ivanka, to come forward for candidates for the job. There have been reports that she has been thinking of the former ambassador to the UN of the U.S., Nikki Haley, and even one report that one should not be surprised if President Trump, in the end, put forward his own daughter, Ivanka, as the next president of the World Bank. The sad thing is that even though promises have been made, there is scant chance that there will be a change in the leadership of the Bretton Woods institutions. The reason being that those powers who were able to carve out for themselves power and influence at the end of the Second World War are reluctant to make any change. So as we have seen in the Security Council permanent membership, as we have seen in other institutions created after the Second World War, sadly, there will be no change. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Bill Andrade, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, every man must act in the rhythm of his time. Such is wisdom. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.